Hi, I'm Case Lowe, co-host of the Open the Voice Gate podcast. The one question I'm constantly asked when it comes to Dragon Gate is how do I get into the promotion? Well, stop asking and start listening to the Open the Voice Gate podcast, released every Wednesday on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. For exclusive news and show reviews, look no further than the leader in Dragon Gate coverage, Open the Voice Gate.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hey, kids, do you like professional wrestling? Well, we like professional wrestling, too. Sorry to be late here, but travel issues, which I will get to in a moment. I am Jeff Hawkins. He is Chris Novembrino. Chris is having audio issues. I'm having travel issues. Everything's foobar. Chris is typing.
I'm re-getting the show slate because my preamp decided to fucking shit the bed before we got started here.
Just Dynamite, maybe the King of the Ring thing.
Yeah, we're going to do Dynamite and King of the Ring. Yeah,
and maybe an ice cold take on Deadline if you have one. I have like two, and that's about it, because it was a show that existed and was there, but it wasn't offensive like some people made it out to be, I think. I think it was decent, especially the men's Iron Man Challenge or Iron Contender Challenge. But no, I went to Cincinnati to watch a Bengals game and to visit our friend Sean Ross Sapp. Title of this episode is Sean Ross Sapp Punched Me in the Face, which he did accidentally at the Bengals game. He's cheering and he's like turning around and stuff. He just skull cocks me right in the jaw. I go, what the hell, Sean? And then they called the touchdown back and it's like, so like every time they made a play, he pretends to punch me and I have to sell it for him. We had a very lovely dinner after, but my jaw was still sore. But yeah, no, I get to Cincinnati, plane's late, and then we have to sit on the tarmac for 45 minutes. I go to get a cab because I don't want to wait in the Uber line. The three cabs there leave. Cab stand shuts down. I get some guy's brother in a like 1989 Dodge Caravan. You called a taxi? And me being a dummy, I get in.
This is how many horrible movies begin.
Oh, Jeffrey. I knew that 10 minutes in, but I was being dropped off first if I was going to be dropped off. And then he goes, he fumbles. It's a dirty minivan, too. And he fumbles in this cup to get a swipe thing. I'm like, I am not giving this man my credit card number. Here's $60. And I prayed for the people who were in that van with me, because one was a German man who didn't speak English. You needed to go 70 miles outside of the city. Just went, oh my God, this guy's gonna get ripped off.
I hope that fine gentleman got to where he wanted to
go. That's all I thought too. He goes, you want my number for a pickup thing? I go, I get that he's hustling for work and that was cool, but I said, nope, no thank you. Just left. And then on the way back, I was on a flight that got delayed 10 times.
10
and eventually canceled. It started at 7:55. They canceled it at 9 p.m. and just kept it, like, they kept
unreal
stalling it and stalling. And then they blamed customers for they chose to stay. It's like, no, nobody ever offered me anything. Everybody else did things through the app. I was there because I wanted a direct flight. I hate connecting flights, but get there today for the flight. I got an upgrade, which was very, very nice. But then it's like, on the announcement, it was like, yeah, catering no showed. So if you want food, go to the vending machines across the thing. I'm like, what is the use of being in first class if all I can get is like a couple of drinks and that's it? But no, I made it home. I never want to go through CVG airport ever again, because it is the most boring airport in the world. I think it's just a long stretch. It's just a straight line of gates once you get through.
None of these airports.
I get. I get. Well, no. Like, there's some things to do, at least like shopping and stuff that's decent, or at least you know, you can go to an arcade, or like I think it's Raleigh Durham that has rocking chairs. I mean, those are nice to, you know, sit and kind of watch and stuff like that, but there's no place to relax in Cincinnati Airport, really. It's just one of these things. And here's second day I'm checking in, and my bag gets flagged by TSA, and he can't find the thing that set off the alarm. So he looks at me, he goes, "Guess we'll have to risk it." Just go. Oh, for those watching on video, I am in Scottsdale, Arizona, in my parents' room, because that's where the router is.
It's good we're still doing TSA here in the year 2024. No, it's clearly useful.
Yeah, so in lieu of like a lot of these shows that I just didn't watch over the week because I was busy, I watched a lot of AEW. Chris assigned me King of the Ring 1993. I'm not sure whether to thank him or not.
You should. That was a good show. That was a good. No, no.
It goes back to a terrible time in my life when I was watching wrestling, though, and I did.
That
like
was
it
a fun. That was a fun time.
First half
capsule.
Was fun.
That was a fun time capsule pick.
A few major stories that happened in our absence here. Kenny Omega out indefinitely with diverticulitis. Emergency checked into a hospital. I believe on Friday.
That's unfortunate, because that Golden Jets angle was really settling in, I thought.
Don't steal my lazy river, because I am going to knit a flag about that stupid promo. Yeah. I've had mild diverticulitis. It is not fun by any means. And remember, Brock Lesnar had a really bad case to the point where they had to take out like a couple feet of intestine.
Right.
I mean, it is not a fun time had by anybody on that one. So, yeah, out indefinitely with that. Charlotte Flair on this past week's SmackDown tore her ACL, MCL, and meniscus out at least 9 months. I would say a year, because those things take time to get fully, fully strengthened and healed if you come back at all. And finally, both Mysterios have re-signed with the company. Dom, a new contract looking to be about 5 years, and Ray announced that he resigned with WWE. So, more Mysterio Science Theater 3000.
I applaud this company for signing a man at advanced age who's visually impaired, like Ray Mysterio.
Wait, no, his eye grew back.
Well, yeah, but we don't know if it's 100%.
Well, we also know his knee isn't 100% right now either.
Well, it hasn't been 100% in a long time.
Well, I mean, he just had surgery. can we get more Ray promos? This man, they brought him out for commentary in that North American title match. He's a sick,
he's
almost
so
boring
good.
Person.
He has... He's so intense and yet so boring at the same time. It's like,
I mean, like Baron Corbin has an anti-charisma that makes him somewhat charming.
No, and Rey Mysterio has the same thing. No, it's as a babyface, he's uncharismatic to the point of being charismatic, ironically.
Oh, really?
I think so.
You think so?
No,
okay.
I find his complete inability to be human weirdly endearing. Like, he's really trying.
So we're going to do some lazy rivering here on various things. And I will start because you just mentioned it. That Golden Jets, Ricky Starks and Big Bill promo battle. Good God. that did nobody any favors. It was like you take worst aspects of everybody and get there. I hope there's not too much echo on this recording, by the way. The bedroom I'm in is cavernous, and I can hear the sound bouncing.
No, you sound fine. I'm sure I'm going to be a little more echoey than usual, but I'm going to try to get up on the mic as much as I can.
Yeah. So let's start with the entire staging.
Okay, so random observation about Ricky Starks, just attached okay. one. His promos are infinitely better at 1.25 speed than they are delivered at 1.0 speed. Like, for whatever reason, Ricky Starks actually improves in a substantial margin when you speed him up.
It wasn't good. Number one, this segment felt like it was completely produced by Chris Jericho. Like, all of it. Like the entire staging of it. Like he came in with like a 30-page script of here's the 15 minutes of this promo. Because it hit all these Jericho greatest hits. The attempt to get a catchphrase or a t-shirt phrase over. I mean, it was Rudy Tootie Booty. You know, all through it. It was
Rudy Tootie Booty. That's right.
It called back to a Glory Day segment of Jericho, because this is very much like Jericho and The Rock talking to Booker T, Big Show, and Stephanie McMahon at one time, where, you know, they're trying to cut him down. And here's the thing. I think Starks and Bill are great. They ooze, as Trevor Dame said, they just give off coolness. And they need to be built up. And I don't understand why you're tearing them down instead of saying, hey, you guys are great champions, but when you get in here with us, we're more talented than you type of a promo versus, look at you. You look like a more dressed up Enzo Amore. Oh, that'll, or, you know.
Remember when you were Enzo Amore, remember when you were tagging with Enzo Amore.
And the Billy Starks joke just fell ass flat.
Oh, dude, Jericho's jokes suck. Like, let's, real talk.
There's a reason he's a groundling. No.
I mean, he is way past the dad joke phase of his life into almost grandpa jokes.
Can I ask a question? Because it comes up for a subject we just talked about. Who is a worse promo, Kenny Omega or Rey Mysterio?
Omega's pretty fucking, I'm sorry, I need to stop like dropping F-bombs. Omega's pretty rotten. He also has, like,
you know what? I won't go for monetization. I'll let you cuss as much as you want tonight if you want.
Yeah, no,
It
was just the second you said like Omega's. No, his promos, I have such a hard time. He's so weirdly inhuman. It's like this Captain Kirk thing.
Yeah, it's very methodical, but it's methodically bad. It's mechanic almost.
It's Captain Kirk. It's Bill Shatner.
You're right. It so is. Spot. Yeah. I think that I could do.
You think that you're so much better than us, Ricky, and also the other guy. But here's the thing. I don't trust Chris Jericho. I would never trust Chris Jericho.
You know what it reminds me of? Have you ever seen the movie Deep Cover with Larry Fishburne? Oh my God. It's so great because it's obvious. It's almost like nobody's ever met an actual drug dealer in that movie. It's like every bad stereotype, and everybody's just playing the worst stereotypes you've ever seen in every movie. Like Jeff Goldblum is just chewing up scenery and overacting. It's an overacting. Everything needs to be so big and so enunciated, and he needs to shake his head when he says.
There's a lot of head shaking. Yes. There's a lot of head shaking. Yeah. It is very, very over gesticulated. And then when you pair that with Chris Jericho, like these two guys.
And they're going to win the tag titles, I think.
They're miscast as babyface. They would be good heels.
Kenny can come back. I don't think Kenny can come back.
I don't know that Kenny can come back.
Yeah, for a while. But, you're right. They'd be great heels.
Oh yeah, this team would be unbelievably grating.
Because they're already unbelievably
right.
Grating.
No, I know. All you would have to do is lean into what they are.
I was cheering for the Young Bucks over these two. That's how grating they were.
I found myself cheering for Big Bill and Ricky Starks at the end of this promo. Like, you know what? These guys suck.
Yeah, no sell jerks. This. No sell this crappy promo and tell them their jokes aren't funny. I started marking for Starks.
I mean, like, when the names all bombed, you know, I think it was very much a judgment call of do you still keep with it? The first couple of times, sure, you keep with it. But, like, every single name that Jericho threw out there, and there were, like, five, which is also just breaking the rule of three. There were five names. They all sucked. And... What did he come up with the ultimate assholes? Was that like one of his names?
I think so. There was, you know,
Rick and the Dick. They were like the laziest names. Like, they were actually.
And he was searching for the one that would get them to start chanting. That was the best. It was like, and why would you make Billy Starks the punchline when she's headlining your ROH pay-per-view on Friday? I just, that was just such bad timing as well.
I didn't even think about that component of it. I just thought it was a reference to WWE and how they pull the first name and the last name off of, like, that's what I thought the reference was.
No. It was to the female wrestler that's Athena's minion in ROH. She's about 18. She's been on a AEW programming before. She's pretty good.
I believe that, but, like, boy, these jokes really sucked, huh?
Yeah. I'll level it up with a positive if you don't mind. I've enjoyed these matches for the tournament. It's just that there's no emotion in the tournament whatsoever. But I'll tell you something. I will watch Mark Briscoe, I will watch Roosh, and I will watch Andrade do whatever they do any day of the week. Like, Andrade is trying to be in that meat division. That's how much he's bulking up right now. He is ginormous now. And that match against Brody King on Dynamite, I loved that match. I just thought this is just two guys just beating the absolute crap out of one another. And Roosh always comes in to be stiff, and I love him too. And of course, Mark Briscoe to me is underappreciated. But the emotion of the matches is all being done on social media in terms of being mad afterwards. I mean, they'll occasionally play a TV promo on Dynamite, or not Dynamite, on Rampage and Collision. But for the most part, it's like, okay, here's these great matches. And they try and get the story over on commentary when they're not cracking jokes. But, you know, I kind of want to see more of these promos, not just, you know, like that. You know, they do like one every week. And it's good, but, you know, I want more. I want to feel like it's not that the tournament matters, but I guess I want to feel the ebb and flow of the emotions a little bit more rather than just watching the matches and go, okay, that's that result. Let's look at the score. You know, that kind of thing. The storytelling to me is a little bit lacking in terms of outside of the ring stuff. Like, you know, are people changing strategy? Are they getting, you know, more and more desperate? Do they want to, like...
Right, that's the thing that, like, normally makes a good G1 is, like, a revision of strategy, a reassessment. Oh, this isn't working. I should try something new. Somebody makes a heel turn during the tournament, realizing that, like, you know, their regular kind of traditional wrestling strategy isn't going to work because their back's against the wall. I'm with you. Like, I think this tournament is very emblematic of sort of like our sustaining criticisms of Khan's style of booking, which is that, like, he places so much emphasis on the good match that he fails to understand what makes some of the mechanics of some of these matches as storytelling devices intriguing in the first place.
Yeah.
A bracket tournament like this, or like not even a bracket tournament like this, although a bracket tournament would be the same thing. But like a round robin's very good for this. Someone starts piling up losses, they go on a losing streak. After the third loss, maybe like they're not doing things right. Maybe they need to actually, you know, take a look in the mirror here. You know, that's the thing that is very much missing from this. The deeper latent storytelling.
Yeah,
you're not finding that.
I mean, like I know Danielson is trying on Saturdays to do it. That part I'm getting out there. That I think that part's okay. It's one of those things where it's inconsistent. I think it's the inconsistency that's getting me right now. Anything non-King of the Ring 1993, because I got a few more areas to go to, but if you got something to go to right now.
You want to do Deadline? We can talk about a little bit of the Deadline results, because I liked that show.
I overall thought it was
I thought it was a watchable show, man.
Like, and both of the Iron Survivor matches, I mean, the men's was just perfectly booked. I mean,
that was righteous.
That made tricking a night. And the women's wasn't too bad. I mean, Lash Legend got to be the star. Tiffany just doing crazy things. Fallon Henley's, I think the only match that really for me underdelivered was the Kiana James, Roxanne Perez.
Sure.
Because, you know, now it looks like we're turning Roxanne Perez heel again, or turning her heel ish. We just had outside interference in the men's Iron Survivor with Eddie Thorpe, and now we get it with Izzy Dame. You know, it just felt overbooked to me. But I'll tell you, the moment that I really marked out for on this show was Briggs and Dijak choke slamming guys, and anything you can do, I can do better. I want them as the Skyscrapers. I want those two as a team, just a giant team. Going in there, because we don't have those teams anymore. Those giant, two giant dudes, two big dudes with a manager who go in there and just kill little guys. I thought that was Briggs was awesome in this match. I thought,
yeah, you know? No, Josh Briggs was really good in this match. And it's like, as I'm re-looking at this card, I increasingly have to like score up how I felt about the two Iron Survivor matches, because like the rest of the card really was nothing to write home about, but like I left with an overall good impression from this show, and that has to be because of the Iron Survivor matches.
Particularly
the men's is very entertaining.
I mean, I'm watching this match and it's like, you know, and there's like what, like 5 minutes to go and Trick Williams has zero. I'm like, there's no way they can figure out a way to get him to win this thing. And then all of a sudden he gets like four pins in a row, or four victories in a row. And the one against Braun was awesome because it defied expectations. Because you think usually, okay, here's where the babyface is going to fire up, and then Braun Breaker is going to get the win, and we're all going to be deflated. But no, I think they made a star in a night there with Trick Williams, even though, I mean, he's the most over guy at the PC anyways.
So, and, yes, you
know, and Ilya Dragunov's awesome and everything. I mean, we don't want to give him short shrift.
No. I was actually just about to pivot into that. Like, Ilya Dragunov versus Baron Corbin. Look, it's a Baron Corbin match, right?
it was a Baron Corbin match.
And it was extremely a Baron Corbin match.
Yeah.
But then you have this little moment where Ilya Dragunov's super hard by hugging Baron Corbin right before he murders him. And I thought that made the whole match.
Really?
That, like, okay. Yes. I thought that was great storytelling. That like you've brought out this new worst element in me. Thank you. Thank you for the horrible things you brought out of me. I'm now going to kill you. I loved it. I just adore the characterization that Ilya Dragunov has brought to top of the card champion. It's such an interesting take on the role and like doing what is like a true tweener thing and finding this dynamic when he's working as the babyface to give him like just enough justifications for slight heel tweaks and vice versa. He's a great champion. He really is.
Yeah, I like him a lot.
I mean, it's probably not going to surprise anybody, but he's my wrestler of the year. Like, Dragunov, dude, he's been killer this year. He earned himself a role, and when he got the ball, he ran with it. He's just murdered every one of these matches. So one of the better Baron Corbin matches for being extremely a Baron Corbin match.
Yeah.
He's awesome, dude. He's an all-time great wrestler, man.
Yeah, and Dragon Lee is the NXT US champion. I think they're gonna hotshot that belt back on the Dom.
I found that to be a very perplexing move. I mean, that was anti my predictions going into that show too, where I was just like, I don't know why you'd belt Dragon Lee. And
Wes was gonna take the belt, I think.
Okay.
And
they
just decided that they were gonna give it to Dragon Lee here, but I think they're gonna put it right back on Dom because of the heat he gets from it.
Well also I think just to stack up the title wins too, he'll eventually be able to be like, I'm like a multi, you know, time US champion or whatever.
Two quick main roster WWE things. CM Punk got it together in week two. I know that week one on SmackDown, he did that line about people shouldn't punch their coworkers for Tribute of the Troops, and that audience just didn't know what the hell he was talking about because they don't follow AEW. I think that's why they didn't get it. But came back with that promo with Seth Rollins, and I think, I think he's doing an a Cody Rhodes gimmick so bad. I think he is like the Wario to Cody Rhodes is Mario. And I think it's fantastic kind of how he's trolling people as being the, he's being a earnest baby face, but he's not at the same time. I'm digging that. And, let's give the champ his flowers. Roman Reigns gets dragged by the work rate purists so bad. And I get that. But as a presence on a show and behind the mic, he has gotten so good during this championship reign alone at owning the room. And look, are the lines always great? No. Is the material always great? No. But his delivery.
Man, when the material is good,
he crushes it.
He crushes it. Yeah.
Like this Randy Orton thing he did Friday was great. I mean, Orton. This is Orton's Batista in polo shirt run.
Yeah.
I mean, he's absolutely just, I mean, he's killing it, but at the same time, he's phoning it in so many ways.
No, yeah, no fucks Randy Orton's fun.
Yeah, I'm
enjoying him.
But I was watching Roman and just listening to him and doing that whole thing about, you know, who's, you know, going to take over the tribal chief. His delivery, he's this heel run, which we all, a lot of us question at first, and we should. And look, I think the title reign's gone on far too long. But boy, it has done wonders for his.
Dude, his
presence, confidence out there and
his presence.
Yeah.
He is a character. He was Georg when he was the friggin' baby face, you know, Superman push. That like his entire character was just Georg, and then he punches the guy. And now there's this like fully formed guy with swagger and arrogance. You can question the tribal chief as like a narrative crutch, and like obviously I have, but it is what it is, and we've moved on. Like he has clearly, like he just has such a, you said it right, the presence. He is a presence in a way that he never was when they were trying to push him as a babyface.
Okay.
And that's just the truth.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I have nothing else for current wrestling. We'll get back to it and be a bit more attentive this next week. How do we want to do King of the Ring 1993? Do we want to just do like Lazy River thoughts things, or do we want to?
Yeah, I mean, okay. So like, we'll start with this. Like, why did I choose this? I was jonesing for some Bret Hart in my life, and so I.
This is a Bret Hart pay per view.
In every way and form, and that is why this was selected. This was selected because Chris wanted to watch Bret Hart.
Okay.
Bret Hart's
when this originally came on. I was a sophomore in college. I was on Rec Sport Pro Wrestling, and we would watch pay-per-views. When was this? Let me get a date proper for this. I remember, because this was summer 1993, because they made a reference to the Suns and Bulls playoff series this is when I was really into the NBA, and I was a huge Phoenix Suns fan, and my brother was the Bulls fan of the family, and boy, did that break my heart. I didn't like 1993 WWF at all. Watching this, though, I loved the first hour and 43 minutes.
It was so good, right? Like Bret Hart's yeah. Righteous, man.
Yeah,
he's such a great wrestler. He's so good.
A lot of my noticing things were like verbal of how they were presenting things and whatnot. Like for the preamble of the tournament, number one, McMahon. All McMahon in terms of introducing us to this. And boy, did they want to get over that Dayton, Ohio is the heartland of America. Dayton, Ohio is the most boring city on earth.
I love that. Like right in the heartland. That's a phrase. Used to hear the heartland.
Not
a
North
lot
Dakota.
In...
Not the Midwest. Not really. You know, the Midwest. No, Dayton, Ohio. That's the heart. This is where Hogan wanted to do his Yokozuna thing, because I'm sure old Manhattan Vince does think that Dayton, Ohio is the heartland of America. He probably thought corn was grown in Dayton, Ohio for some reason.
Might be. You never know.
I think, like, on this, and I mentioned this to you pre-show, Jim Ross is very much in old WCW Jim Ross form. He has not yet been broken mentally by the taunting of McMahon in his ear, or Heenan, who absolutely Heenan buried Jim Ross. This is when you start mentioning schools. But you know, Savage is game, but he's emotional and he's connected to the product, but he's not good at times. But he's at least trying. Heenan is cooked to me. Heenan is just doing all the race baiting stuff, trying to crack jokes here. And there are times where Savage is even going, it's not very funny, Heenan, or Brain, or whatever. You know, just no-selling jokes. You know, Jim Ross still has his, still calls Asian people from the Orient, which is xenophobic, but still mildly endearing in some ways for Jim Ross, because he's just, I mean, that's just Jim Ross. A lot of xenophobia on this show. It is a time capsule of 1993 wrestling, or at least what this is. When I said this is a Bret Hart show, remember, this is right after, or not right after, but it's shortly after WrestleMania 19 in Vegas, where they did kind of the screwy thing where they take the title off of Bret, give it to Yokozuna, and then they give it to Hulk Hogan. And so they kind of just decided to use this King of the Ring to rebuild Bret. And if you look at Bret's opponents, it's Razor Ramon, Mr. Perfect, and Bam Bam Bigelow. Three guys who are great work rate guys. So yeah, this is going to be and then they're going to introduce the feud with Jerry Lawler. Burger King.
Hey,
Burger King.
Although I will admit, I've kind of got a soft spot for heel Doink. Heel Doink's kind of a good character.
We'll get to that. We can go match by match or round by round.
Absolutely.
Also of interest, playing backstage reporter tonight, Terry Taylor, because I watched the Coliseum video version of this. That was on.
Yeah, Paypal. I did too. I did it as well. Yeah.
And he's actually not a bad Dasha bot, because
he's not.
Back and forth. Oh no, that's a very good point. And he asks him, you know, have you been working on your, I mean, the interview with the Smoking Guns, where he asks about their finisher and how they've been working on it. So I'm like, man, he's asking better questions than Kathy Kelly has in her 2 years back with the company.
I actually kind of like backstage Terry Taylor. Like, I was like, oh, wait, the Rockin' Rooster? Yeah, let's go.
The Red Rooster, yeah. So eight men. After qualifying matches in here, it is a
in the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up thinking, maybe I can pull a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card, but with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now, introducing Slab Packs from Arena Club. .com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now, when I buy slab packs at Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. I was able to open an Arena Club slab pack, and I'll be honest, it was a lot better than what you normally do. Say you go to a card show and there's a random innocuous brown bag of cards, and yeah, you can open it and look, it's going to be junk. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're probably going to get in those. Maybe you find that fun. And sometimes I do. Sometimes I like just opening up cards and saying, ah, hey, look at some random cards or whatever. But if you're really in this game to find value and find particular cards, it sucks to have to buy these mystery packs. And it ends up being, you know, almost nothing. You know, nothing of value. Not with Arena Club. You get a display, again, of all available cards, hit rates, grading. So you know that when you're opening up the slab pack, you are going to get something valuable. You are getting something good. And Arena Club, in addition to having those great slab packs we just talked about, is also a marketplace for card collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying, all that sort of stuff. But those Arena Club slab packs, man, they are revolutionizing the repack game with transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed in your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. So again, sending these things off, it's going to be officially graded by Arena Club. And the Arena Club grading process is accurate, fast, and transparent, with full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. So whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. So right now, I've got a special offer here for Voices of Wrestling Network listeners. You can get 10% off of your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Now, that's a crazy offer. That's 10% off a $400 slab pack. $40 off right there. 10% off your first purchase. No matter what that purchase is, 10% off. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase on Arena Club. And we thank them for sponsoring the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. Keyless entry, no more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second fingerprint recognition and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio. And then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally, and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They are on standby for you 24/7, so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy Video Lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages has arrived, and really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys and reach in my pocket or, wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the Eufy Video Lock. I touch it. 0.3 second fingerprint recognition, 1 second. Door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
Here's something you will always learn about WWE tournaments. The monster heel always gets a bye in the semi. So Bam Bam Bigelow is the monster heel in this tournament. He will be getting a bye. But overall, I have a soft spot in my heart for all eight of these wrestlers for various reasons. I mean, Brett's great. Razor's great. Perfect, of course, is great. I love Mr. Hughes. Just as a presence, he's the one guy in my wrestling fandom who looks more like a professional wrestler than actually can perform as a professional wrestler. But he's a sweetheart of a trainer and a guy, from what I hear. But when he took on the big Bubba Rogers outfit in WCW, kind of, and he was. If you remember, he teamed with the Diamond Stud, now known as Razor Ramon, and he teamed with Vinny Vegas, I believe, who makes his debut here as Diesel in WCW. They had Haas teams with him. He was the big cat for a while because they tried to do the same thing that they did with
Ernie Ladd, with
Keith Lee. They gave him the big cat nickname because he's from the Midwest. He's from Kansas City, so they decided that. But I always loved Mr. Hughes. I just do. He always, like, the glasses and the scowl, even in ECW, which was a work rate. But I mean, they call him the Roughneck, and he comes out to, is it MC Light who did Roughneck, the song? It was just such a badass entrance. It was great. I hate WWF Jim Duggan, but I love Mid-South Jim Duggan. He is such a hoss. But, I mean, he does his job here. Bam Bam is on his second tour of duty because he went to WWF. They tried to make him they basically built the first Survivor Series around Bam Bam Bigelow.
Yeah, right.
As Hogan's friend here. And, you know, they brought in Oliver Humperdinck as his manager. So, and then he goes to, he goes to NWA and gets absolutely crushed on the mic by Ric Flair, who calls him Fat Boy. And then goes to Japan for a while to kind of reconcile. I think he went to another company as well, but then comes back here as the monster. And then Luger.
He was in WCW for a minute, I want to say.
He was in NWA for a minute. He was
NWA,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
But that was like 88, 89. And this
okay.
So
he did do a stint, I want to say, in the 91 WCW.
That might be true as well.
Yeah, I want to say he's on one of those pay-per-views at least.
Lex Luger is here as the narcissist. And I don't know, as I've watched more and more old Lex Luger, he was horrible on promos, but he was trying so hard to be good on promos. You know what I'm saying? Like, he came in with a plan for every promo he did when he was a member of the Horsemen, and he just could not put words together to save his life. But this narcissist gimmick is kind of working for him a little bit.
It kind of works for him. Like, it's a stupid gimmick, but once the match starts, Luger really found a halfway decent match rhythm for this narcissist character. The entrance is stupid. The presentation is stupid. But, like, the whole gimmick around the forearm, it's not bad. It's not great, but it's not bad.
And Tatanka, a.k.a. War Eagle Chris Chavis from Hampton, Hampton, Virginia, Bethel High School. Got a lot of local media when I was growing up. He's still on his undefeated streak, which
they had to protect here.
They had to protect here, but also I just recently ended up watching, I think it was the Raw or the Superstars, where they beat him.
Right.
And that was such a anticlimactic thing because they beat him to Tony Holm, Ludwig Borga.
Right.
On his rise, and then they just lost
aborted
all
the him. Yeah, the Ludwig Borga thing really
so
fast.
Random thoughts on Hart Ramon, if you have anything specific.
I really liked the finish to this, like the finishing sequence to this match. So
it wasn't a finisher. That's what I liked about it.
Right.
This. Yeah.
Yeah. In a lot of ways, you know, Hart, of course, you know, always very clever about, you know, finding other ways to finish matches than just put people into the sharpshooter and it's the same finish every time. I think that makes, I honestly, it's like, why am I rewatching Brett matches? Because I don't remember how every Brett match finishes out.
Right.
Yeah. You know, and that's, I mean, part of the replay value of Vader matches for me is the same thing. Vader had many different ways that he closed out a match. And I think that's a commonality between my two favorite wrestlers.
Well, I like that this wasn't the pattern also where it's like, you know, you do your setup and your finisher and then the guy's done or whatever, or he kicks out of the finisher.
He escapes out of the Razor's Edge. And that leads into a sequence, but that's not the end of the match. That led to a near fall that was a good enough near fall that it actually baited me. I was like, oh, the match is over. And then I realized the match was not over, and I was like, oh, heart got me. Hell yeah.
Can I be the guy to say I loved the commentary to start this match because they were talking about Ross and Savage really got into tournament strategy on short matches. And how you have to go, you know, you may be more aggressive in the beginning so that you can save your energy for later that night, et cetera, et cetera. You're trying to get the pins a lot quicker so you can get some rest in between. You may not want to have a feeling out process because of the time limit. This hit Ross's strong points at this time in his commentary to me. And Savage was willing to go along for the ride, which I really liked a lot.
Yeah, and again, Heenan completely useless on this. I was just, Heenan and Ross never had amazing chemistry, in my opinion.
Heenan felt like he was the voice of Vince a lot of times. I think I brought that up already.
Yeah, you already did. Yeah,
Perfect and Hughes, I thought it was well booked in terms of, look, it's a DQ, but they were protecting Hughes to lose to the Undertaker. So he used the urn to continue that story and get heel heat. Perfect second best towel throw in his career, where he does it behind the back and lands on Hughes' shoulder.
Yeah, that was a good one. That's a good one.
And I liked that he attacked with the urn afterwards and hit him in the head a couple times. They didn't play it up as much in the later round that he might have gotten a concussion from, which I thought they were going to do. Or they should have done a little bit more, but I didn't mind the DQ here because it was like one of those things where, look, Hughes is being safe for the Undertaker. You can't beat him right now. And Perfect looked, babyface Mr. Perfect. Cause this is right after, or this is like a few months after the team up against Flair and Ramon at, I think it was it Survivor Series or was it Royal Rumble? Where they did the whole Savage picks Perfect as his partner type thing. If you don't remember, don't worry about it.
I kind of remember. I don't remember when that happened, but I mean, I remember that angle. And like, no, I mean, to build off the babyface Mr. Perfect thing.
Because I like
babyface Mr. Perfect.
He has an edge to his babyfaceness. And yes. We'll get to that in a second. But I love the body glove outfit that he always wore, although those things are cheap as hell because they always break on somebody chopping him. But it was such an original thing because this was a couple years after Living Color came out with Cult of Personality and Corey Glover was wearing body glove during that the surf suit to come out. I really dug Perfect's wardrobe at this time.
He had swagger, man.
Yeah.
Perfect was really, really good. In this particular vintage, I like him. He's a guy. He's definitely a guy I always wished, had more of a WWF run, like as a legitimate champion. Because like,
I really wanted a better WCW run after this.
Yes, like, I know they really didn't get good work out of him in WCW, and it was super annoying.
Yeah, the horseman angle I hated. I mean, he was such a great horseman material, and really the missed opportunity is if Rude were able to come back and Hennig were able to come back, those two as a package or as part of a stable with like a Flair and an Anderson, give me that all day. Give me that.
And then turning Perfect heel and making him join NWO. It's so character.
West Texas rednecks.
Yeah, right. No, like right. No, I know. It's like, I'm just going to be Kurt Hennig now. No. You don't get it. You had the best, one of the best gimmicks ever. You were Mr. Perfect. Like,
Here's the other thing I noticed in like the preamble. So when they were going over the bracket, like, not only did everybody have their name, you know, Bret Hitman Hart, Razor Ramon, but it was always like the dastardly Mr. Hughes and the evil Razor Ramon. They all had qualifiers for all of them too. I was like, oh, it must be Vince is on one of those kicks where he wants a qualifier for everybody in addition to their nickname as well.
They were doing that with the last run with Vince. Remember, he was doing that with big Bronson Reed.
Yes.
And all the other guys too. I mean, like that's a time honored trope in Vince-isms.
Bigelow beat Duggan. Pretty straight ahead.
Yeah, really straight ahead. I mean,
Bigelow looks strong here, and he's the big baddie of the tournament. So
Duggan was a really good selection to build up Bigelow, though, too. Duggan's a really good gatekeeper babyface.
Yes, he is. And it's weird because if you watch Mid-South, because the ring is smaller, I mean, Duggan is a big guy. That's the thing you don't get about, like, 93 WWF is a hoss federation, but the ring is so big that guys look small in it. And we'll get to that in a bit when we get to the 8-man tag. Luger versus Tatanka in a time limit draw. I thought this was a perfectly booked match in so many ways.
This over-delivered for me. Like, Lex Luger and Tatanka are not... Neither one of them are my favorite wrestlers. And I found myself legitimately enjoying this match and going like, is this Luger or Tatanka or both of them? But they're having a very good match. Like wasn't a dazzler, but like it wasn't bad. They had a plan. They actually told a coherent story of that match.
Luger doing the histrionics with the cover for his forearm. I dug that, you know.
Yep.
Heenan is just doing every bad racist Native American joke you can think of. I love the anger. I mean, Luger is in his pure over. He's the Kenny Omega of his day in terms of just absolutely overacting about certain things. Like when he's throwing his tantrum after the draw and demanding 5 more minutes. It's hilarious, but it's bad, but it's good for the Lex Luger character. It's like, hold on, I came here to win the King of the Ring specifically. I want 5 more minutes. Like, nope, it's a draw.
No, I like that, and then like when he gets the match restarted, just immediately hitting him with the bionic form. Like, yeah, I love that. Like, it's good stuff.
I don't have all of the talking segments in between, especially the Coliseum ones in here, so I don't have those in order on any kind of run sheet.
I watched it on Daily Motion, so I mean, I did get the Coliseum segments. I don't know if I got.
I did, but I mean, I don't order where the matches are. But
I mean, I guess like we can move on to Hogan. Or
I want to give some random thoughts on these. Like every segment with Yokozuna had the Japanese lute and the sitar, and it's just the dumbest thing. I'll talk more about the Yokozuna post match stuff in a second, but what gets me when we go into Hart versus Perfect here is that Gene Okerlund's an asshole,
right? He's immediately and then Gene Okerlund at the back end of that interview acts like, oh, what the, well, what did I do? I didn't do anything. Like, he's immediately
and he's healing Bret Hart, who is the wrong guy to heal in this tournament, because Bret's gonna be the hero afterwards. It's like, well, Bret, you were talking about Mr. Perfect and say you could beat him any day of the week. And said it should have been the other guy that was being healed on this match. I'm watching this. I'm like, Gene, just ask. Let these two have their rivalry instead of just trying to stir trouble between the two of them.
It was so stupid to give them the direction that, like, one of them needed to be like the overt heel in this match. This match totally could have worked without Perfect working as heelish as he ended up doing in this match, and like having to do like a soft turn on him going into this match. All Howard had to do was just win.
Your dad, my dad can beat up your dad.
Your dad. Yeah. Yeah. My dad. There's not a day of the week that your dad could ever have beaten up my dad. It was like hilariously dorky. Like,
but yeah, no, right. Look, Hart versus Perfect. I mean, it was a phenomenal match. Well, I mean, it's almost 19 minutes of pure bliss watching these two because they're so great.
Both of them selling their asses off for each other. You get all the great signature sells. They are really great storytellers. While they're good at being economical, they were not necessarily being economical in this match. Mr. Perfect comes off the top rope for a really sick drop kick at one point during this match. I loved this match. This took me to my wrestling happy place. I really enjoyed this.
Yokozuna beats Hulk Hogan in his swan song for the WWE or WWF. This is a Hogan match. And Hogan sold and Yokozuna sold, kicked out of the leg drop. Eventually, Harvey Whippleman comes down as a cameraman. I kind of loved Chekhov's cameraman because they weren't focusing on the Whippleman guy. They were focusing on a guy who looked a lot like Dave Meltzer, to be honest with you, with a mullet as a cameraman. So you kind of knew camera guy, something was going on there at the time. It's a Hogan match, but it's a good Hogan match.
This is a surprisingly decent Hogan match. Like, I don't mean...
Jimmy Hart with the act did nothing for me as a babyface, though.
No, he does not. Like, the Coliseum promo, too, before the match, I thought was...
Oh, it was terrible. But on the flip side, the Coliseum promo with Oakland, I think later Jack Tunney... Where he goes, he says millions of, like Fuji speaking is broken English for a while, but then Oakland goes thousands of Americans very upset right now, and Fuji just goes, why?
Yes. I know that was such a great reaction.
But
no, to go back to the match real quickly, I mean look, you know, you're never going to get a ton of like praise of Hulk Hogan from me, but I will say in this match, you know, if you're looking for an example of a match where Hulk Hogan actually puts someone over in a meaningful way, Yokozuna, he does do it here.
Yeah.
There's no denying. I mean, he kicks out the leg drop. They make a big deal out of that commentary. It takes three boots to finally get Yokozuna down. And then Yokozuna, when he finally pins Hogan after the flash paper, Hogan does not do the Ultimate Warrior kick out. Hogan actually sits there and does the three for real skis.
Can I say, as someone who has now watched hillbilly wrestling for a number of decades, that flash paper spot was one of the better ones that I've ever seen.
I thought that was really well executed. Yes. I was also thinking that too. It was like, damn, that actually came off really well.
That's better
well.
Than the last one they did in AEW.
This was not what I picked out this pay-per-view for, but like this is one of the stronger Hogan matches, to be completely honest.
Yeah, Yokozuna's
it's not like
good
a Dazzler,
too.
It's a Hogan match, but yeah, right. Like I thought it was very well executed.
I have to go back and watch some of his world class stuff as Coquinas Maximus. When Yoko
but that's
gained
not
a lot
Hulk
of
Hogan.
Yeah, I'm talking about Yokozuna, and when I mean Yoko gains a lot of weight to play this sumo guy, and it's almost like, I mean, I think it eventually killed him.
It kills him. Yeah, it kills him.
I mean, he's lumbering around and stuff, but I mean, he does a good job with carrying far too much weight. And of course, the post matches, let's bring in a bunch of Japanese actors playing photographers because we're gonna make this a big deal in Japan. Because I believe this was right at the time where New Japan was starting to get a lot of parade. I mean, WCW was working, of course, with New Japan at the time in 92. Because that's where Rude ended up jacking up his back. I mean, this was prime Chono Muda New Japan. So they were trying to counteract at least some of the buzz in the wrestling world. If not, everybody didn't know about this. But, you know, they wanted to kind of screw with WCW still a little bit, working with Japan, et cetera, et cetera. But the overall point you should take from this is, you know, for a Hulk Hogan match, this was very, very good.
Yeah, no, if you're looking for a time capsule on that, this is actually a really interesting time capsule on a Hulk Hogan match. And then we get to our four-man.
This is the eight-man tag, yeah.
The eight-man tag, which... is goofy, but like, what did you think it was going to be?
I'm going to say this, because it's WWF and it's so campy all the time. DiBiase and Mike Rotunda are a hoss team. They're a sneaky hoss team. Like, you watch these matches that they had against, I think they had one against the Beverly Brothers. They had matches against the Road Warriors. They are two big guys. Like, DiBiase is 6'4", I think, at least. And Rotunda, I think, is 6'2". But they are bigger than you think they are in terms of that. I mean, and then when you're in there with the Steiners and, of course, the Guns, and this is Billy Gunn with blonde hair and a mustache, and you almost can't recognize him. Guns with caps. That killed me. And the Head Shrinkers, you know, Fatu before he became Rikishi. The match itself sucked. I mean, the ending was so preposterous. He has him in the $1 million dream and he drops it to mock him and then gets wrapped up in a small package. And you're like, this is stupid. F this.
It's so stupid. Yeah, right. Like, he has him in the $1 million dream. It's like, he's not done with them yet. It's like, what would he possibly do? And then they're like, he's going to have to answer to Wall Street. It's like, no, he isn't. Like or IRS. Yeah, it's like,
That Jim Ross brought up that IRS went to Syracuse. Wasn't IRS. That was Mike Rotunda. And then said that he had won the tag team titles with three different partners, which I'm sure Vince was throwing a fit in the back. No, that was a different guy. You can't say that about him. Because Vince was very much, this character is different than
right. Like, these are not the same people. These are different characters. Yeah.
But that's Ross before he was broken. That's why Heenan, I think, laid so much into him during this match. It's like, no, there's no continuity in WWF. This is the guy. This is Irwin R. Scheister.
It does. And I mean, later on, that would, Billy Gunn's a prime example of this, where like later on that would evolve to the point where like Billy Gunn's continuity has nothing to do with the Smoking Guns at all. Yeah. He, you know, like that's just a name he has.
We've mentioned before, but Irwin R. Scheister is the most problematic name for a character possibly ever.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, just yeah.
Here's the most interesting thing about this match was the Terry Taylor promo with the Steiners and the Guns, where he actually brought up them practicing their finisher and would they be able to finish it with them. And then you see the magic of what the Steiner brothers were, because Scott is just a terrible promo at this time, but Rick Steiner just comes in there just like a bat out of hell doing his dog face stuff. And that's what always made him such an over babyface, and that's why he got over everywhere he was, because it's just like, look, he's a big, dumb, meathead jock who barks. And he never tried to be anything more than that. And he would throw guys, because he was just a savage. But, this match so disappointed me so much. And then Shawn Michaels with Kevin Nash debuting with the name Diesel, as opposed to My Bodyguard, defeating Crush. 11 minutes of my life I won't get back. Tell me what you liked about this, Chris.
My favorite line of the pay-per-view might be when Jim Ross, in all seriousness, says, "This man, Crush, has had many problems with Doink the Clown, which we have documented on this broadcast." And I thought that was a beautiful piece of sentence that we got on this show.
Oh, this ending where two this doinks, was... and then they do the Groucho Marx thing from Duck Soup, where they're doing the mirror exercise, and Crush is just such a dope. But this, they are pushing Doink heavy, because remember, he, in order to get into this tournament, Mr. Perfect had to beat Doink like twice. He had like a 2 out of 3. Series with Doink, who was still Matt Bourne, I think, at the time. So Matt Bourne, you know, pretty good wrestler, but still at the same time, it's like Mr. Perfect was feuding with Doink before Crush, and you're like, what do they? I mean, heel Doink is an awesome character, but at the same time, you watch and you go, anybody walks into this room right now, I'm going to be humiliated watching this clown wrestle.
Yes, no, it's Heel Doink is an awesome character. The execution on Heel Doink is not good, but you'll never get me to go, oh, this didn't work. No, the music's good. Like, they actually did a really good job with this heel theme song. It's like really unsettling in an excellent way.
I'm trying to remember who the second Doink here was. I'm not sure if it was Phil Apollo or not at this time, but
and Matt Bourne does a wonderful job as Doink. Like, he clearly understands like how to wrestle that style of match, and he is a really like a very solid hand. It's a very good mid-card act that was not fully executed because like Vince doesn't have that vision, but like it was, the things were there, like that, it was just the right balance between like, because like now you have like these clown wrestlers and they go too heavy into the unsettling thing, and like Doink is still close enough to a conventional
he's
clown.
Playful enough where his creepiness becomes even more creepy because of the play.
Yes, right, it's like the uncanny valley thing that actually happens when you're like still trying to create the veneer of being normal clown, but you're actually not normal.
Yeah. And then the finals, Bret Hart defeating Bam Bam Bigelow in another really strong match. Bam Bam cutting a promo for Coliseum Video that Bam Bam was never a strong promo. Let's put it that way. But he was always how do I put this? You know how you're not the words may not be coming through, but the tone comes through. I mean, Bam Bam Bigelow, you know he's a badass when he comes out there. So I mean.
I liked in his promo leading prior, not to the Bret Hart match, but just at the start of the tournament, where he's like, I want Tatanka. I want to beat his streak.
Yeah, that was great. Yeah, no, I liked that.
That was dope.
Right. I forgot about that. That was great.
that was a great line.
And then the angle with I did like the line by Bret. I mean, Bret Hart looked. Here's the problem I have with Bret Hart. I am not the biggest Bret Hart as a wrestling fan. He's good. I'm never gonna say he's not good, but Bret Hart doesn't do a lot for me. But Bret Hart, in as old man Bret Hart, talking about how he wants to be an actor and stuff, but then you watch him on screen and he's putting on this cape, and there's a little bit of a smirk there, like, what am I doing? This is embarrassing. You know, very self aware that he doesn't want me to do it. And then we get into a Jerry Lawler coming out and there are parts of this promo I found charming. Like, you weren't even brave enough to get into this tournament, because this is a follow-up to the Wrestling Classic, which was a one-night tournament on pay-per-view that crowned Harley Race as the original king.
Yeah, right.
Jerry Lawler's only 43 here, which shocked me, because I swear, I mean, Jerry Lawler.
I swear
like
he was
50.
Older than that, right? Yeah, no, I would have thought he was 50. Yep.
I think he's only 43 here, if I have my math right, and Lawler is just in WWF. Lawler does nothing for me, absolutely zero, especially on commentary when he becomes a seventh grade, you know, poo poo pee pee boobies guy. But I mean, as a wrestler, I mean, he's obnoxious but over the top. So, and the Hart feud really. I mean, it was Vince McMahon booking Jerry Lawler, and when you go back and watch the Memphis stuff, and you can see the depth of what Lawler could do, and you just see what WWF ended up doing with him, and you see such lost potential in what they could have done with a guy like Lawler, you just kind of shrug and go, well, it is what it is. But yes, Burger King versus King of the Ring.
Yeah, I mean, once they made him Burger King too, it's like it's a total veneer.
Brett saying Burger King lives rent free in my head, trying to get that chant started.
Mm. And then it's stuck though. I mean, they called him Burger King for a while.
Oh, they still call him Burger King. Well, no, they don't anymore. They now revere him as a legend, but they did deep into his career.
Yeah.
So I mean, maybe it worked. Maybe it's cool. I mean, why didn't Lawler get any cross promotion when they had Burger King sponsor things and stuff? That's lost money.
I mean that I know. Well, and certainly when Vince was fishing for advertisements,
yes.
I mean, you know, maybe in Vince's mind too, the getting a Burger King chant started might
actually
get like the
Burger King,
promoters.
But nobody can beat the real Burger King. The Whopper with cheese is such a
yeah. But you know, that's a big Whopper. Ah,
yeah, yeah. In retrospect, like the first half of this, I mean. It's not that the Yokozuna and the eight-man tag and the Shawn Michaels beating Crush are horrible, but the pace established by the tournament matches really makes it feel like this show is dragging in so many ways before we get to Hart and Bigelow, to me.
Yes. Yeah, you definitely feel, I mean, dude, I was not sitting there eager beaver for this Intercontinental title match. And... I mean, clearly just a misusage of the Intercontinental title here as the match where you at least get the work rate thing going back. And I mean, I guess maybe they thought they could take that off this pay-per-view because you have Bret Hart doing his thing so aggressively. But like, it's just that double momentum killer of the world title match, then the Intercontinental
yeah.
title match,
yeah.
which was weird. A weird sort of like decision, and then the actual King of the Ring final was just strange placement.
All right, let's end it there, I guess, unless you have anything else.
Yeah. I don't know that I do.
Okay, cool. On X, you can follow me at CrapGame13. You can follow the show at Shake Them Ropes, all one word. Chris is on Instagram at Dr. Nov, DOCTOR_NOV. We're part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network, podcast for any of your fandoms. If you're a Japanese wrestling fan, if you're a fan of old wrestling, we have podcasts for you there. I am also part of Fight Game Media, now all free. I do the Dynamite show with Paul Fontaine. We go live about 20 minutes after Dynamite ends on YouTube. Audio drops the next morning. You can find that at Fight Game Media's YouTube page. Chris is... in the winter solstice, he is trapped in a luxury hotel writing his novel, being haunted by ghosts. But he's
yes.
also going to give, he'll also give you guitar lessons while he's being spooked.
Something like that. Yeah. So if you guys are interested in guitar lessons for the holiday seasons, please hit me up on Instagram, DOCTOR_NOV. Jeff is referring to what will be my winter season gig here, where I will be working on top of Sandia Peak here for 24-hour shifts a couple of days a week. So that'll be fun. If you're interested in seeing what that looks like, follow me on Instagram as well, because I think that will definitely yield some interesting pictures, whether it's ravens, mountain lions, or anything else you might find at the top of the upper terminal. You never know what we might have up there.
And we'll see you later this week. Sorry for the delay, but, you know, travel happens.
Hopefully my mic will work then.
Hello, everyone. My name is Taylor.
And I'm Kelly.
And we are the co-hosts of Jumping Bomb Audio, the number one show all about the world of Joshi Pro Wrestling. Episodes drop every other Monday, where we discuss the biggest Joshi news, review shows, and preview the hottest upcoming Joshi action.
So whether you're a new fan or an old fan, we've got something here for you at Jumping Bomb Audio.
Check us out on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.